Right. And does anybody want to start? Right. Personally. Yes, well, providing it's, you know, keep it fairly brief. That's all I say. Keep the whole thing ticking over.
This confuses festival day and the park, I think. Speaking for a World Revolution, which is also a section in Britain of the ICC, which was mentioned a couple of times in the presentation from the front. Well, basically, the ICC had its differences with the CWR on some points, which may appear to resemble parts of the debate that you've heard tonight. But essentially, on the terrain of this debate, the ICC can only express a solidarity with the CWR in the defence of the Marxist perspective, and also to rebut the slanders against the CWR and the Marxist movement in general, on the basis that the real nature of the work of the revolutionary minority is to defend state capitalism, that is to say, a denunciation of the entire revolutionary media as bourgeois, which the CWR, in fact, has already pointed out. And we'd like to point out that whereas the CWR has mentioned the actual evolution of the past generation for the miners, and I can criticize the SPTB for their lack of a contribution on this question. The position of the SPGB on the question of violence, or what the CWR has characterized somewhat friendly fashion as by abstention from the struggle, is really brought into question. And the SPGB has not told us anything about whether they stand with or against the class violence of the miners on the picket lines, and their defense against the actual repression of the bourgeois state, which is acting under our eyes today. So it's not simply a question for the future after the vote has been made in the Socialist Party, as they think will be voted into Parliament, but which is indeed, that the whole nature of parliamentarianism is in any case only a fact, of course, a reflection of bourgeois elitism and the idea that someone's going to run the country from Parliament. This point isn't really explained. But then these are, compared to the necessity to take a position on the development of the class struggle today, these are trivial points. And as I say, on these questions and on the question of the necessity for a Marxist perspective, it would be ridiculous for the ICC to begin a debate in this context with the CWR. The main thing is that all the people in the room should ask themselves whether they also want to participate in the sheer abstention from the class struggle, which, as I say, is to put it rather kindly, actually to use another word that the CWR more commonly do, we could call it scabbing from the class struggle. Which would be a lot less kind and a lot more to the point. The fact is, do we defend the struggle of the working class or not? The SPGB hasn't even mentioned it. The CWR say they do defend the class struggle, so do we. And all the people in the room should really consider that before they consider anything else. This really points to the airy-fairy nature, the completely fantastic nature of the dribble from the SPGB. However, we also have a point to make on the question of the CWR's activity, which I say is not to try to elaborate the differences that we have, for instance, on the question of class consciousness, but to ask what we're doing debating in this context at all, rather what they're doing debating in this context. We don't support this context for the development of debate between revolutionaries. Now, not out the CWR having a long memory, we'll recollect that we have also had a meeting with the SPGB. I think pointing out that our infantile disorders is not really an excuse for yours. The question is that we're now some years beyond the stage at which we used to, we worked within the framework where we would debate with anybody. And the point is, the SPGB by excellence debates with anybody and everybody. And they don't care whether they're debating with all the reactionaries or denouncing the revolutionary milieu for being reactionary, whatever the hell they do. This is the point. This is what they regard as the intervention in the class struggle. And for us to seem to be subscribing to this, which I'm afraid that I think the CWR is by holding an actual joint meeting, I think this is a very serious error. I think, furthermore, it puts into, if we're to speak of the vanguard role of the party and so forth, which, as colleagues know, the ICC stands for again with the CWR, and we won't debate the differences on that either. The fact is, is the role of the vanguard to engage in this kind of democratism with anybody and everybody? I mean, this is really the issue. And it really puts into question whether the CWR really know what they're standing for in terms of being the vanguard of the working class in our view. And it's on that basis that we have clarified our previous errors and did not debate with anybody and everybody in whatever context they may choose. It obscures the basic presentation of the class positions and the fundamental necessity to engage in the class struggle. This is, by excellence, distraction from the class struggle. The SPGB have made that consciously, testified to that consciously in their presentation. I think this is really more the point that should be concentrated on.
Does someone have a direct question that they want to put, please? Yes.
I was unaware of the contribution of the person. Seems to me quite amazing, after years and years and years, the working class, not only in this country but elsewhere, being sold out by one political party or another, or by groups wishing to become political parties, that really the whole question that's in debate now should be really broadened to actually examine whether political parties are in fact, an essential expression of the proletariat or not. The fact is that political parties in the past, and no doubt in the future, predominantly oppose the petty bourgeoisie. And this was a problem that certainly Marx was conscious of, and Marx and Engels were conscious of. But anyway, that is the question. Why is it that when parties have failed the working class time and time again is not the question really that should be discussed tonight, whether the working class be political parties. Because the CWO, for instance, in theory, puts forward the dogmatic, rigid Bolshevik position on the party, a position which completely cut off ahead of the working class, and then spends practically half of its debating time making apologies for the very logic of their positions, making apologies that in fact this party form of organisation will not in fact substitute itself for the working class, that it will not involve a bloody party dictatorship as it involved in Russia. But at the same time, the Socialist Party of Great Britain, for instance, still keeps within the framework of the party concept, still keeps with the Kautskyan, with the social democratic, with the Second International concept of party organisation, and at the same time trying to avoid the logic which the CWO, on the other side of the same coin, tries to avoid the logic. The fact is that the social democratic concept of the party evolved into the Leninist concept of the party, and both are equally as counter-revolutionary. Both are equally as potentially state capitalist as the other is.
Questions directed at both organisations.
Okay, first, I can kill two birds with one stone.
Still answering questions?
Yes. Well, I'm trying to deal with one of them, each of them, as they come up. Yes, if you put your hand up.
As I say, I want to deal with kill two birds with one stone. And this question of Marx and Marxism. Now, one of the reasons why we decided not to mention Marx, from this side in this debate, was that it didn't seem very useful to us to, the debate wasn't what did Marx think, what didn't Marx think. It wouldn't serve a very great purpose, for them to come out with a whole list of quotations from Marx and for us to come out with a whole list of counter quotations from Marx. I mean, there's absolutely no point in that. We'd rather have a debate on the real issues, basically. I mean, if you like, are the working class thick? That is the debate. That's the issue of tonight, isn't it? We're saying, no, they're not. They are capable of understanding socialism. They are capable of actually wanting social, they are capable of understanding that capitalism can't work through this. These people are saying, no, they're not, they're thick, they can't do that, only we can, only us, a minority, a vanguard can. So, you know, downstairs in the pub afterwards, I've got a whole series of quotations from Marx which we can swap, but not up here in this meeting. We want to have a decent debate on the issues. The second point is, we were slandered, if you like, by somebody said that we abstain from the class struggle. First of all, the class struggle isn't something that you can abstain from. It's not if you're a worker. I mean, if you're somebody that's born without any property, you have to go out to sell your labour power for a wage or a salary. You have to find an employer, and you're automatically in the class struggle, you know, whether you want to or not. And most members of the Socialist Party are in that position. Most of them are also fairly active in the various, you know, working class organisations, in trade unions. We participate in battles over wages, over working conditions. But one thing that the Socialist Party doesn't do, because of what we've explained, we don't set ourselves up as a vanguard. So we don't go along to workers and tell them how they should organise their strikes, tell them what to do. We're not there. I mean, that isn't our role, to be leaders. Obviously, you know, when the workers are in struggle, we're completely, you know, we have solidarity towards them, because we are members of the working class who work for wages, and we understand the position of people who are forced to go on strike, who are forced to struggle against their employers, and of course against the state machine as well. They say this is this idea of the party which the last speaker mentioned. It's quite true. There are two traditional conceptions of the party, and they are linked. You know, one of them is the theory of the vanguard party, which we're debating tonight, that the minority must organise, must try to be a leader, must seize power and do various things for the working class. That is the Bolshevik, the Leninist conception of the party. The other one, which is held by the Social Democratic parties, the Labour Party, in fact, by the Tory parties and all parties, is they also offer themselves as leaders, but different kind of leaders. Now, we in the Socialist Party, because we don't, you know, reject the idea of a party, we are opposed to both parliamentary-type parties and to vanguard parties. What, in fact, you know, what the party is for us in the end is this. It's the working class, politically organised, to establish socialism. I mean, you know, that is all the parties. It's the working class organised to take democratic political action to establish socialism. It's not a division of the workers into leaders, whether they be MPs or whether they be vanguards. It's a class conscious working class, as I say, organised politically. That's what we're trying to, you know, that's what we're trying to get across. That when a majority of workers have come to understand and come to want socialism, naturally they're obviously going to organise to put it to bin. They're obviously organised at their places of work into various, you know, workplace organisations, but they're also organised, in our view, geographically, you know, politically, to enforce their majority view that they want socialism. I mean that's it's as simple as that. So, you know, the charge against us that we somehow got the same conception of the party as the Labourites, it's another slant like the one that we abstain from the class struggle.
Yes, do you
want to
respond to the question?
I didn't actually recognise the question. I thought it was somebody sounding off. The comrade has made some attempt to answer it from the SPDB point of view, but I think in doing so he revealed this dishonesty on the other side of the table. The debate isn't about whether we think the working class are thick and you think that they're great. That's not what the debate's about at all. The debate is about the fact that under capitalist domination, the working class do not see that the alternative socialism, which we are all putting forward, is a viable alternative at the present time. For us, there has to be a material process which explains the transformation of working class's ideas. We all know, and you all know, when we go to make propaganda inside the working class, wherever we find ourselves, the workers say, nice idea, mate. Pick but it won't work. And we're going to get that from now to the day of the revolution. Why? Why? Because you are underneath, it's the point we've made at the beginning, you are underneath the domination of the capitalist rule, and capitalist alternatives are all that are being posed. The revolution overturns that. It opens up the space in which socialists can work. Right? And it's only that. That is the essence of this debate. That is the reason we came here, to establish that fact. Not by idealist propagandizing. You've been propagandizing for 80 years, and you're smaller now than you were in 1970. So your propagandizing doesn't work, right? And that is the point that we've tried to establish. As to the party question, the party that we want to establish is the same party that Lenin and Engels wanted to establish. For Engels, unless the working class were inscribing the party in a mass form, then it was not a working class party. At the moment, for us, it's an aspiration. It's not an achievement. And for Lenin, he constantly purged those people from the party who were of... and purged, by the way, doesn't mean shot of humans. He constantly cleaned out the party from people who had held petty bourgeois opinions, who came from petty bourgeoisie. He sought all the time to promote workers in the Bolshevik Party, which is why the Bolshevik Party was not only politically the most proletarian party in history, but also sociologically.
Right, see if you can remember what it
is. I'm not a member of either organisation, but partly as a result of the meeting tonight, I think I've probably considered myself quite sympathetic towards the mind of the CW Europe from what I've heard. I also agree with the comment from the ICC who spoke earlier. In actual fact, I think this question is immensely quite trivial, but nevertheless, in the video, I think it should be posed. And it's a question about violence. I'd like to put the question really to the Socialist Party, and that is that given that the capitalist class is using violence every day at the moment against 100,000 workers who are in fact putting forward bourgeois demands, how can they tie that up with a situation in the future where perhaps 20 million people would have voted that they want socialism or communism, and the capitalist class would sit back and say, all right, okay, well, you can have what you want, we'll let you get away with it. I mean, in many respects, you only have to cast your mind back to the situation which happened just 10 years ago or so in South America, i.e. in Chile. Now, I wouldn't for one moment suggest that the so-called Marxist Allende was a Marxist. Nevertheless, the ruling class saw Marxists as communists and as revolutionaries. And they certainly didn't last very long there. So perhaps you're suggesting that the capitalist class in England, a slightly more civilized than the capitalist class in South America. And if that is the case, you've then gone on to explain the beginning of what in fact you're doing, which is theorizing socialism in one country, which is the sole reason why the revolution was generated.
Yeah. Okay, the question of violence was mentioned, has mentioned before, I suppose it's a fair question, but I'll put one point to you. You say, why are the capitalist class now using violence against the miners? Shall I give you the answer? Last year there was a general election. In that general election, which way did the workers vote? They voted for the parties of capitalism. They voted for the Labour Party, they voted for the Tory Party, they voted for the Liberal Party, and they voted for the SDP, and they in fact, for the reasons explained here, no doubt, because they've been brainwashed, they voted to give political power to the capitalist class. I mean, it's as simple as that. It's as simple as that. Capitalism continues because workers want it. Capitalist governments continue because workers, at the moment, vote for, as I say, capitalist parties. In fact, it's the working class that gave the capitalist class political power on a plate, and they do it every single election. That's what happened so far. So it's no good turning around and saying this. That's not quite true. You can turn around and say why, because that's what we're doing. Well, that is the answer. But let's imagine a completely different situation. I mean, there's a myth going around the critics of the Socialist Party this evening, that all we say that workers should do, or all that will happen at the time of the Socialist Revolution, is that people will put an X on a ballot box and then they'll go home and watch the result on the television. It's not like at all. The most important, in fact, for us, voting, Parliament and so on, it isn't all that important. It's merely a means. What is important is the fact, first of all, that people, the vast majority of workers, have come to want and understand socialism, the first part. And secondly, that they have organised themselves, that they've organised themselves to establish socialism and to put socialism in. So it's just inconceivable that there could be a majority of socialist MPs in Parliament without, first of all, there being a majority outside of Parliament, but not only that, but without there being the working class organised outside of Parliament, ready to establish socialism and to put it into being. So you have a completely different situation at that time, with a vast majority of people who were socialists. And naturally, this would apply not just to ordinary workers working in offices, in mines and in factories, but to workers carrying out various functions in the state machine, thinking of the armed forces and the police. It's obviously for people that don't believe that it's possible, it's difficult to imagine what the situation would be like when there is a mass socialist consciousness. But let me say one thing, last thing on Varron. Suppose that there is a majority in favour of socialism, the majority of the working class have come to want and understand socialism, that they are organised and that they're going to put into practice their majority will to establish socialism. And suppose that at that time the capitalists, I don't know who the capitalists are, because some capitalists are cats or old women, but supposing that the capitalist minority decides to commit suicide rather than commit euthanasia by taking up arms against an overwhelming majority. Well, what will happen? They will be put down. It's as simple as that. We're not namby-pamby pacifists. We're not going to allow a tiny handful of capitalists to prevent the will of the overwhelming majority coming into this. If that situation arises, that's always been our position. Same as the Chartists, peaceably if we may, forcibly if we must. But having said that, I can't see the capitalist class being so silly as to commit suicide. But you ask the question, there's the answer. If they are, then they'll have to be restrained and put down. That's the short answer. It's always been the position that the Socialist Party has held. And in fact, I shouldn't really. I'm abusing the right that I'm speaking. But there's been an amazing ignorance and been shown by some people, because they've imagined that we stand for the establishment of a socialist government in Britain. Anybody who has read the literature of the Socialist Party in Britain, I can only come back and say this, that we don't stand for an international revolution. We stand for a world revolution, and we don't stand for an international revolution precisely because of what the word international means. It means that the world continues to be divided into nations and that the revolution takes place one by one. So this idea that somehow socialism will be established in Britain or socialism will be established in Chile, it's a lot of nonsense. It's nothing to do with what we stand for.
Well, there's four people already who've indicated they want to speak. I'm going to take them in order. Back first.
I'd like to start by asking GB a question. I'll accept for the sake of argument that members of the SPGB are no less thick than the rest of the working class. But if it's true, as they say, that the role of their party is to, and I'm quoting from their case for socialism, is to spread knowledge so that workers must become convinced knowledgeable socialists, and that the conditions are here, as Mr. Buick said in his speech, for the creation of communism now. I think I'd like to ask them, why haven't they packed up and started having hobbies, or is this really their hobby? Well, seriously, I'd like to intervene on behalf of the CWO, which is that I'm a member of, and I'm not going to accept the terms of this question and answer thing, which means that I'm not going to be allowed to speak for my organisation because I don't happen to be a leader on the platform now.
Well, there's no leaders on the platform, and you're speaking now.
Yes,
okay. Right? Okay. I mean, I could be a dictator and throw you out, but I'm allowing you to speak.
Thank you very much.
Purge it.
I think it's significant that the SPGB talk about socialist consciousness and in the same breath talk about the conditions for socialism and what socialism is in very general terms, without mentioning the process of how we get to socialism and how we reach that classless society, that money economy, and without classes and so forth. The SPGB doesn't talk about revolutionary consciousness. It doesn't even really like to talk about class consciousness because it sees consciousness in terms of actually winning over individuals on the basis of explaining on a one-to-one basis what socialism is. As the speakers in front have said before, this is completely contrary to a Marxist understanding of how consciousness materialises and what the class struggle actually is about and how the revolution struggle will come about. When we're talking about socialist consciousness, we have to incorporate the idea of a revolutionary consciousness and the idea of revolution. And we've also got to understand that revolution is a bloody business. Revolution isn't a matter of hauling booths and hustings and winning majorities in elections. Revolution is about a class struggle which materialises out of the crisis of capitalism and out of the economic and political collapse of capitalism and out of the circumstances of two classes facing each other. The one class, the working class, becoming ever more desperate. Its material circumstances deteriorating daily and the absolute poverty of the bourgeois parties to do anything about that. If we look at what the SPGB says or doesn't say about what to do in a revolutionary situation, because this party, the SPGB, are just ordinary individuals who have learned nothing from history and therefore nothing to offer the working class, have nothing to say in a real situation of collapse, of economic chaos, of imperialist war, and of the absolute carnage which capitalism offers us and is offering us every day. They have nothing to say. They have no lessons to learn from history. They have nothing to learn from the Paris Commune and the fact that Marx realised, not the working class who were massacred in the Commune, but Marx, a bourgeois intellectual, who realised that the working class can't just take hold of the state, of the bourgeois state. It has to smash that state. But to do that, it has to organise an insurrection. And what does the SPGB to say about the Russian Revolution, where the workers did organise an insurrection, where the party which was advocating insurrection and openly saying that that's what it stood for?
Yeah.
What does the SPGB proudly stand for? The Mensheviks. Other socialist so-called, according to their tradition. The Mensheviks, who are openly for class collaboration, which is what the SPGB stands for at the end of the day, who supported the Soviets, so long as only the Mensheviks, who advocated the Constituent Assembly, in other words, the parliamentary system in Russia, were in control. As soon as the party was advocating insurrection, in other words, revolution, had a majority, a democratic majority, in the Soviets, in the organisations of proletarian democracy, which again the SPGB doesn't know anything about, can't distinguish, just uses this word, democracy.